Success isn't given, it's earned. And earning it means becoming the person who deserves it. The bottom line is where we cut through the chaos to simplify success, uncovering the strategies, mindset, and resilience it takes to win. Real stories, expert insights, and practical tools. Because the only way to the top is by putting in the work. This is The Bottom Line.
Welcome to The Bottom Line. I'm your host, Ryan Herpin, and on this show, we cut through the noise to focus on what really drives success. Now, we can talk about success in business, success in life, but I really like to focus on what makes somebody successful. And today's guest is Douglas Wick, a business coach, broadcaster, and executive with more than 40 years of experience in sales, leadership, and business growth. As founder of Positioning Systems and a certified E-Myth and Gazelles coach, Douglas has guided over 250 companies toward greater clarity and results. He's also a leukemia survivor, which has fueled his passion for helping others build freedom and resilience in both business and life. So, Douglas, it is such an honor to have you on the show again. I love having you here. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity again, Ryan. Pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. I've just been waiting for another chance to pick that beautiful brain of yours. We do a lot of the same stuff, but you have been doing this a lifetime more than I have. So it's always fun to learn from you, to soak up that knowledge and try to apply it in my own life. But, you know, on this show, as the name would suggest, The Bottom Line, I like to get to the point. But I want to kind of reframe what leaders are facing in this segment. And the problem facing many in the audience is misalignment. Teams struggle to stay on the same page, creating wasted time, wasted energy, and a whole lot of friction. So the first big question I want to ask you today is, why do you think so many teams struggle with staying on the same page?
Well, I think the biggest concern would be, or the biggest problem is that they don't decide what is our priority or what are our priorities. That's the struggle. Again, I think we talked the last time about the book, The One Thing. If you can get everybody rowing in the same direction, there's teams are unstoppable. And yet most leaders don't necessarily, they're dealing with too many priorities rather than deciding one, let's focus on this one thing for this quarter or for the year. And if they can simply do that and get then everybody on the team funneling into that same one thing, that one purpose or one priority, they're going to achieve much, much more than they would if they're trying to manage multiple priorities. Yeah.
I think that's a really good point. You know, I mean, it definitely stands to show that when you overcomplicate things, you make it too convoluted, you have too many targets, it's really, really hard to all be shooting at the same thing. There's got to be clear, concise vision, plan, metrics in place. So I can see where that really does drive that unified, you know, effort in the same direction. Keep everyone on the same page, right? So what are some simple ways leaders can create alignment across their company? Because I know there's a lot of ways to not do it right, but I know there's even fewer ways to do it the right way. So through your experience, what have you found that works?
You know, again, I think that when it comes to choosing a priority, a lot of times companies will say, well, we've got all these things. And yet what they don't realize is when they choose one thing, all the other things will also be followed with it. Okay. And so one of the things that some of my companies have done is create a theme around one thing. And in doing so, I had a beer company, believe it or not, a beer distributor, who created one thing themes and got everybody in the company working toward the same goal. And it drove remarkable success for them. The issue being that, again, let's focus on just one priority for each quarter, or in their case, it was a trimester instead of, they had trimesters versus quarters, but one thing for a year, one thing for a quarter, either one, if you can just build a theme around that idea, whatever it might be for the quarter or for the year, you're going to get your team working together toward that and achieve much more in a shorter period of time than you would by having multiple priorities over a longer period of time. Fair enough?
Makes sense. It's the same thing as setting milestones, objectives, goals. You know, if you set too many all at once, you're spreading yourself too thin. But I've got to bring something back up here. I need to find me a beer client. I've got to find me a company that's distributing beer or a brewery, because that's my type of client right there. But
I can I don't drink anymore, but I can remember having meetings at 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and they'd bring a 6-pack in or a 12-pack or whatever it was, because it was part of the
part of the culture.
Yeah.
That's my kind of meeting. I would like those meetings. We'd probably not get as much done, but it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. They were cautious. They only had maybe one at the most or two at the most, but it was natural for them to do that. It was part of their, but they do.
And they found a way to stay aligned. So I mean, it works for them. Right.
Yeah.
But how does misalignment show up in everyday work? And what are some of the warning signs before getting completely misaligned?
Well, when you have misalignment, people just have problems making decisions. What do we focus on? Whereas when you have alignment, everybody's clear. We know where we're going. We know what the focus is. That is a distraction that we're not going to do, because this is our goal. This is our focus for the quarter, for the year. And it just makes it easier for people to make decisions on what to focus on and how to decide what to put my attention on. The intention and the attention is clear, and it makes everything so much easier in that case. Yes.
I like that. That honestly is really, really simple. And that's what I love to have on my show, is simple, practical advice and solutions, right? Now, there's this saying that I absolutely love. It's called, if we all don't row the boat won't go. So what role does communication play in helping teams row in the same direction?
Well, once again, I think that about the time that you're getting sick of it as a leader, it's about the time that it's beginning to sink in. And so, one of my clients, I think we talked about this on my last appearance here, focused his attention on getting, and it was a car wash, on membership. Everything in his car washes, this is back in 2008, 2009, was focused on the idea of getting people to sign up for a annual membership, a quarterly membership, whatever it was, but it was all focused on getting people aligned with the idea, because he knew in his business that customer was 10 times more valuable than any other customer. And so when everybody in the business knows that, and they were very focused on customer satisfaction, they got a company in India to make calls to their customers to make sure that the customer, after they were at the car wash, was satisfied. They also then had a way to monitor customer satisfaction and report that back to their team. They were very, very, very aware, and everything was all that focus. We want our customers to be satisfied, because we know that when they are satisfied, they're going to sign up for more memberships and continue to be a member of our membership team, which then grew the business, of course, as well. So,
you know, I think that's a valuable thing to bring up, because it's also thinking outside of the box, right? In the communication of the idea, the concept, the drive, the focus, it gets everybody on the same page and it creates that buy-in, right, with the team of, hey, this is what we're going to do, this is why we're going to do it, and here's what it means. You brought up that those type of customers are more valuable because they're signing up for a commitment, right? They want to keep coming back to you. They want to keep using your services. So it's funny, because I've actually taken that concept and I'm applying it to a lot of the skilled trade clients that I have, because it makes sense. But the only way it works is if all the technicians and the whole team is on board with communicating the value of going to that subscription or that membership model, right? So that's a great example of how communication can really play a big factor in actually accomplishing the goals. So, outside of that, what's a quick story you could share where a team went from completely shattered to unified?
You know, the same client, I was actually talking to Chris about this. The same client had, he had a large leadership team. He had like 12 people on the team. And he said, Doug, at that, I think this was probably about 2008. He said, Doug, I've got a lot of good people, but nobody's executing. So what we did, the Gallup had a leadership, strength-based leadership program assessment that you could do. And what we did was we had them all take the assessment, all 12 leaders, and then we plotted their scores, and we looked at the people that were good at executing and the other people that were maybe good at people skills or other things. And what we did was we aligned the people. There was about, it just so happened that there was about a half dozen of them that were really good at execution. And so we teamed them up with those people that had other skills. And that year, they actually had about a 35% increase in revenue. And the major difference was the people that were, you know, one of the guys was extremely good at, with people, but he wasn't good at executing. Well, he had a partner now that was good at executing. And so the things that were falling through the cracks in the execution area were picked up by him. And that's what led to their growth that year, that those people that were not good at executing had a partner that was good at executing, and they were following through and making.
Great example. It shows how that dynamic can really complement one another, yeah. Right? You know, I'm absolutely loving this wisdom. So to our audience coming up, we'll explore why so many visions, you know, so many visions really sound great on paper, but never really take root in the culture. So stick around, stay with us. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on The Bottom Line. Welcome back to The Bottom Line. Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to The Bottom Line and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move? You can also catch the podcast version right on our website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. We are back, and I'm here with Douglas Wick, and now we're diving into the challenge of vision. So many leaders craft a vision statement that sounds inspiring, but too often it sits on paper and never really comes to life in the daily work. So, Douglas, it's great having you here. I'm so glad to have you on this segment. This is a great topic for us to talk about. And I'm excited to really kind of dig into your experience and see what you have on this topic. So, you know, kind of looking at this from a different lens, right? The problem is that companies often write a really strong vision. They put time and effort into it. They think about it deeply, but it doesn't translate into lived culture or daily habits. So, with this being such a loaded topic, why do some visions sound inspiring but don't really take root in the company?
Well, I think there's two probably reasons for it. First of all, the first reason probably is, do the leaders live it themselves? And if they don't, it's not going to happen. If the leaders don't believe and live the vision, then you don't have any spirit, passion, you know, to it. The other reason, I think, and this is maybe more in terms of when you talk about a vision, you're talking about focusing on a priority. One of the things that happens with maybe a vision or a priority is the fact that for example, a goal, all right? But we don't, James Clear says, we don't rise to the level of our goals, we fall to the level of our systems. And a goal is, or a vision is wonderful, but you gotta fall in love with the process of doing it, following and building toward having a process that leads toward achieving that vision or that goal. And so many people don't break that vision down or that goal down into, okay, what are the steps to get there? Because only when we follow the steps to get there do we achieve the goal. Everybody wants to win an Olympic gold medal that enters the Olympics or is in the Olympics, but it's their system. What did they do every day? How did they process that? What was their plan to get better? Maybe a hundredth of a second every day in order to get there. And if they don't have that plan, they aren't going to achieve that goal of winning the Olympic gold medal or silver or whatever it is, you know? So without a plan and a system of, or a process to get there, you're not going to achieve your goal or your vision. Make sense?
I've got to add on to this because that was very well said. It's a very clear point because, you know, something that really sticks with me is it's just like taking a vacation, right? A vision is like a vacation, you know, goals, objectives, but you decide the destination. You understand what it looks like, what you want to do when you're there. You don't just hop in your car and drive off any direction. No, once you decide the destination, what you're going to do when you get there, you map out how to get there. And you take one step at a time, one turn at a time. And it's as simple as that. But something you really said is they've got to live it, right? The vision has to be lived in the speaking world, right? Where, you know, I'm working my best to become a public speaker and to be a, you know, change maker in that world. One thing that's been made very true to me, what makes the difference in a keynote and in motivating others is when the messenger becomes the message. So the leader of the business, they've got to be the message themselves. They've got to
embody it.
Yes, exactly.
Embody it.
When passion flows out of you, other people pick up that passion and they get passionate about it too. So I couldn't agree with you more. I really think the reason what really kind of makes the difference there is living it out, walking in those shoes, in those daily disciplines that turn into habits, that turn into success and progress towards that vision. But, you know, how can leaders communicate vision in a way that truly motivates people, right? It's one thing to show it in your actions, but how can you also get people to understand it and buy into it?
Well, I think, you know, the comment you made about action is really, really important. That you got to believe, you got to behave, and then you got to become. And so that it's almost as if the leader has to already be in that envisioned future, that vision, and behave as if we've already accomplished it. And sometimes leaders fail to do that. And until they act as if we are already there, or I'm already there, or the business is already there, it probably isn't going to happen. And that, I think that's probably the most difficult thing for a leader to do, because if they have doubts, those doubts are going to be communicated back to their people. And so one of the most powerful things that they can do is, as you mentioned, they've got to embody the feeling of already living in that future, that envisioned future. Because once they are there, everybody else is just going to gravitate to that same feeling. And that that's, I think, the difference between a successful leader, someone who is eminently good at it, and somebody who's just sort of good at it.
There was some serious gold nuggets of wisdom in what you just said. And I've got to recap a few very important things. Something you said actually clicked with me very well. Believe, behave, become. It's a process that is, you know, it can be seen as maybe a little odd, a little difficult, you know, hard to understand. But I'm actually writing a book on this topic. I call it The Hypocrisy of Becoming. It's living as if you were right now the person you want to become. It's believe it, behave as that person and become that person. So you actually just highlighted the whole concept of a book I'm writing right now. And I could not agree with you more. You know, there's been a lot of people on this show. And one thing I can say consistently with your thought process, your mentality behind this, your experience shows, because I'm thinking of as, man, you are already on top of things. I'm still discovering. So I love it. Love it, love it, love it. So on top of that, what are some practical tools to keep vision aligned in everyday actions, right? Because we've talked about living as if, right, and acting as that person, but what are some ways that can help us stay with that and stay living it every day?
Yeah, one of the things that that I did, you know, when I you mentioned my conquering cancer in 2012, and part of the new coaching platform that I'm using is NeuroChange Solutions, which is we provide a program which is called Change Your Mind, Create New Results. Meditation is one of the things that helped me, in fact, was primarily responsible for my conquering cancer. And so that process of meditation, one of the elements in it is to believe and feel as if you have already accomplished that envisioned future. And it's something that I do every day, is to get up in the first thing I do in the morning is spend about an hour, hour and 15 minutes meditating and building that belief, behavior, and becoming into the process in the meditation process, sure, which I look as prayer to a great extent. Yep. And but the final outcome of it is to feel as if I'm already in that envisioned future, and I believe that's what helped me conquer my cancer, and I believe it's the same process that can help leaders create that envisioned future in their business.
I feel like it's pretty universal. It's whatever you want to accomplish. If you believe it, behave as such, it's just what happens, right? And it reminds me of a story with Jim Carrey, right? Long time ago, before he was ever really successful and famous, he wrote a check to himself for $10 million for acting services rendered. And he looked at the check every day, carried it with him a lot of the time. And then eventually it just happened. He received a check for $10 million for service, you know, acting services rendered. But, you know, Doug, before we continue, where can our viewers connect with you online and learn more about your work?
Yep. I've got a blog. It's strategicdiscipline.positioningsystems.com. It's on HubSpot. They can contact me at my email address, dwick@positioningsystems.com, or call me at 319-393-2565. Those are the options right now. So thank you. Thank you for asking.
Yeah. And to our audience, I can highly recommend working with Douglas and learning more from him. As somebody that's in a very, you know, kind of the same field, doing a lot of the same things, he's got a mountain of experience on even me. And I can say just where his heart is at with what he does, you can't go wrong. It's less about what you do and more about your intention behind it. And I think his intentions are about as good as they can come. So we will be right back. Up next, the fear every leader faces, letting go of the wrong people. Doug will share how to make, you know, tough decisions without destroying culture. So we will be right back. Stay tuned, get some coffee, stretch out, grab popcorn, whatever it is you got to do. But we'll be right back on The Bottom Line. We are back on The Bottom Line. Now, Douglas Wick is still with us, and I'm excited to tackle one of the hardest leadership challenges that a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs face. And that it's what happens when someone on the team isn't the perfect fit, right? Leaders often avoid making the tough call, but the cost of holding on can be devastating. So Douglas, I'm excited to have you here on the show today and to focus on this segment, you know, talking about such a difficult topic. So I appreciate your experience that you're sharing with us. And I know our audience is going to be all the wiser because they're listening to you. So to look at this picture in a way that a lot of people can, you know, really connect with it, the challenge is that many leaders avoiding letting go of the wrong person, you know, it ends up leading to hidden costs, poor culture, and stalled growth. You know, the saying, you know, if you know, one bad apple can spoil the rest. right? Yeah. So this is a topic a lot of leaders struggle with, even if they don't want to admit it. But to get right down to it, why do leaders avoid making the hard call when someone isn't a fit?
The best book on that really is I'd recommend everybody read Good to Great, because in Good to Great, Jim Collins offers two questions to ask, which we'll get to. But the real reason people don't make a decision has nothing to do with the other person. It has everything to do with them. They don't want to go through the process of having to hire someone, okay? Because that process itself is a long process in many cases. And then the fear is, of course, that they're not going to hire somebody that's going to be any better than the person that they already have. So in most cases, the decision is not about the person, it's about themselves and their fear of what they're going to encounter. They're procrastinating, in essence, is what they're doing. They're afraid to make that decision because of all the time they're going to have to invest in finding someone to replace them. So in most cases, what they need to do is to have a good hiring process, which we recommend top grading as one of the processes to use. But if they have a good hiring process, I remember being in radio and being afraid to let somebody go in radio sales because how do I find somebody else? Well, once I got the confidence in my system of hiring, that fear went away. And so most times Collins talks about there's two questions in terms of making a good decision. One is, if this was a hiring decision, would you rehire that person? Okay. And the other one to ask yourself, which I think is even more profound and better, is if the person came to you, right, and they said they were leaving, how would you feel? Would you be relieved or disappointed? If you'd be relieved that they're leaving, that probably tells you the answer is you should have probably let them go and move on, right? So
I think that's a really good point, and that's a really good question to ask. You know, I haven't actually thought of it like that before. You know, I've been in positions where either I have to let people go or clients of mine need to make the decision to let somebody go. And you know, there are a lot of reasons why people avoid it, and a lot of it is the unknown, the assumptions of what might go wrong, what could go wrong, what could be a problem. But I like to think of this saying once told to me, the best time to invest was yesterday. So I think of it as the same thing as an investment. If you have somebody who you've worked on, have tried to help progress and grow, but they're stalled out or they're becoming toxic in some sort of way, think of it as an investment. The sooner you start investing in somebody else that is capable, competent, and qualified, the sooner you're going to get results that exceed what your previous expectations were. And to me, it just makes sense. But you know, now that we've talked about kind of why, you know, leaders avoid making that decision, let's talk a little bit about the reality of, like, what are the costs, both emotional and financial, of keeping the wrong person?
Yeah, there's interesting. I remember working with a company that did they provided capital for truckers, and one of the things we had a hiring top grading has the cost of a mishire. We did that exercise. There must have been about 12 leaders in the room. And one of the guys who was at the CEO of the company did the exercise, and he came out with a $1.5 million was how much that hiring mistake cost them. And I think that was only the cost in terms of, you know, how much time it took to hire the person, how many people were involved in the hiring decision. It doesn't count the cost of what that bad hire might have cost them in terms of people that might have left, might have cost in terms of people who didn't work as hard. One of the things that I think most people don't realize is when you have someone on your team that's not putting forth the effort that they should, or not producing, the other people in the organization look and go, why am I working so freaking hard when that guy is being paid the same amount and is not producing? So there's a lot of measured cost to having a person. But in this case, this guy actually said, well, you know, it was all the time we took to hire this person, the mistakes they made in their position, it came to $1.5 million. And he had that person worked for about 6 months for the organization. And that irreparable damage that they had cost that company. And it was just simply because they made a poor decision hiring them in the first place. One of the best things you can do when you hire someone is to create Top Grading talks about this, a job summary scorecard, which identifies what is this person accountable for? What are the 4, 6, maybe 8 things that you need that produce that position to produce, and then measure them. Measure them after 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. And if you don't do that, you're really making, you're really choosing not to be accountable or hold that person accountable to the job accountabilities and the outcome that they're supposed to produce.
100%. You know, something my mentor said to me a long time ago is you cannot manage what you do not measure. That's if right. you don't measure, set milestones, have, you know, those KPIs, even on a position level, how do you expect to improve or know when it's time to cut somebody loose, right? It's very, very important to be able to have those measurements to make those decisions. And that's something a lot of business owners and leaders miss. You know, we just go off of this assumption. It's almost like Jim Rohn says, you know, you can turn away from the weeds. There are no weeds, there are no weeds, but they'll take your garden. So if you're not paying attention, you could be hemorrhaging resources, finances, opportunities, and at the same time, poisoning the rest of your garden, the rest of your crop. So it's one of those things that it's too important to not put the adequate time, effort, and focus into. So, you know, with that being said, let's say, you know, you're in the position, you've identified maybe someone's the wrong person. How can a leader approach this in a way that's both firm and respectful?
It's funny because yesterday I spent about an hour with a customer that I had worked with, and now it's came back. They have a partnership, and one of the people in their organization is a family member. And this gentleman who used to be the CEO, he's now the CFO of the company, he called me and said, Doug, I think the right word is subjective, because he's my brother, he's involved. And he asked me for help. And I said, one of the things that they hadn't done or haven't been as accountable to is having accountabilities and measurements for their people. And in particular, for this particular person in the organization. And what you absolutely need to do is to have regular, first of all, have those measurements. What is this job supposed to be producing? Are you measuring them? Are you giving them feedback? Because it's one thing to have measurements, but if you're not giving them the feedback, you're going to end up surprising them at the end of the day. I think that it's say that we have annual or semi-annual reviews, that's not enough. It should be almost really monthly, that that person should know this is what you're accountable for, and be measuring it themselves and be accountable to those performance measurements every month, every week in reality. And so it shouldn't be a surprise when someone has a review, are you succeeding or not? And when you're not doing that, you are failing not only that person, but you're failing the company. And so that's why you need those measurements, and that scorecard is what I call it, to measure the performance of everybody in your organization. And that way they are accountable. And most people want that accountability. And if they don't, they probably shouldn't be in your organization.
That's a really good point. I kind of want to echo something from this. You said scorecard, and the whole time you're saying this, I was thinking of the one of the biggest success stories I have and my firm has, in transitioning a company to a major sale. It was a super simple strategy to start it all off. And it was basic accountability with a cardboard and crayon method. We took whiteboards, we rolled them out to every production station, we talked to all the employees and just asked them, how long does it take you to do this? And they gave us the answer. And we just wrote that up there as, hey, here's your target. And every time they would move through that product or that unit, we just write down how they did. So we can track it with smiley faces, frowny faces, and that simple accountability, but seeing the target and knowing where they land, we were able to grow the profitability substantially. And it was just as simple as having scorecards for everybody. So, to our audience, don't go anywhere. When we return, Doug will uncover the hidden cost of weak accountability and how to build a culture where people own those results and their own results. Accountability is too important not to discuss with Doug, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on the bottom line. Welcome back to the bottom line. Don't miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media TV favorites streaming live or on demand whenever and wherever you want. Grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our lineup of bilingual programming in both English and Spanish. Prefer podcasts? Listen to the bottom line anytime on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv, covering business, breaking news, lifestyle, culture, and more. Now Media TV is available 24/7, so the stories you care about are always within reach. We are back, and in this closing segment, we are unpacking accountability. Now, this is a really, really big topic, and we could talk about this for days, no doubt, but we're going to pick the brain of Mr. Douglas Wick to really dive into some of the important aspects. And too often, leaders shy away from it. But the cost of weak accountability is massive, both for performance and culture. And the problem, as I see it, is that accountability is missing in many organizations, leading to unclear ownership of results and really stagnant performance. So, Douglas, it's wonderful to have you here on this last segment to wrap up with such a powerful topic. And just as always, we're going to dive right in head first and see what happens. So, on a topic like this, it's important to ask, why is accountability so hard for many leaders to put into place?
I think all of us want to be liked. All right. I can remember my first job in radio when I became a sales manager. And I think I thought that I don't, I looked at it from a standpoint of how did I want to be managed as a salesperson? And I made the mistake of thinking, well, I did this on my own. They can manage themselves. And the truth is that again, we want to be liked, but we need to be both compassionate and accountability. There's a good bit book, by the way, that's called Compassionate Accountability. But the truth is without putting demands on your people, you're not going to get results. And that only breeds a bad culture. So one of the things that I learned was I had to make people accountable by in a sales department, particularly setting their own goals. And then once they set their goals, I said, okay, so how are you going to achieve those goals? Right? What's your process for achieving that goal? And I would meet with them every week, and I would when they came in, I would they had a they had put that on a 3x5 card, and I would say, we both had a copy of it, and I said, so are you making 10 calls a day? Are you presenting $15,000 a week? And down the list, are you making three spec commercials every week? And invariably, what they would say is they go, oh, no, and their head would kind of, and I'd say, well, how can you? You set your goal at the beginning of the year, and you said this was the system or the process you were going to follow in order to achieve those goals. How do you expect to reach your goals if you're not following your system? And they would recommit to that. And invariably, the next week, they would come back more focused, having achieved more, and feeling better about themselves. And because they had set those goals and those that process themselves, they were feeling better and more positive about their outlook and what they were going to be able to achieve. So the problem, I think, is that we think people can be successful without us making them accountable and looking to be liked instead of being a leader and making people accountable. And that, I think that's the fallacy that a lot of us believe, maybe starting in leadership, that it's better to be liked than be a tough guy. But in reality, you can be both. You can be compassionate and you can make them accountable. And in fact, by making them accountable, again, to their goals, getting them to set their own goals is really, really important, because people work so much harder for their own goals than they will for yours. So get them to set their own goals. And then your job is simply to say, hey, you set this. What are you doing? How come you're not doing what you said you were going to do? You're going to be a much better leader, and you're going to get those results from them because they want to be held accountable. They want to achieve more. And your job is just to make sure that they're following through.
You know, I can agree with that in so many levels. And one of the ways I like to put it when it comes to expressing accountability and, you know, the concept there, I try to tell my clients and our audience all the time, treat it just, it's just like parenting. When you genuinely care about your child, you love your child.
Yeah.
You're going to do whatever it takes for their success. And that means hold them accountable when it's necessary, knowing that a hard situation can turn into great results and ultimately a happier child. The same thing with an employee, right? With somebody that you're working with, set a clear expectation, but let them set the expectation sometimes. You know, let them identify the goal. What is possible? Don't set unrealistic expectations. That'll automatically discount any possibility for progress and growth and trust, most of all. But I use it all the time is, hey, you know, what is possible? How long does it take to do this? What is a reasonable expectation? They set the bar. You just hold them accountable to it. And easiest way to hold accountability, in my opinion, is questions. Just ask questions. Hey, where are we at? Hey, do you need help? What are you doing to get over this? How you get, you'd be surprised how often people get offended when you ask questions as if they need help. Really, it's not about offending them. And it's not even that you need to help them. It's just that subtle accountability of you're looking, you're asking, you're curious, and they're responsible for the results. It can make all the difference. But with that being said, you know, within your experience, what happens to performance when accountability is just missing?
Nothing. That's what happens when, you know, that's the exact thing that happens. If accountability is missing, nothing happens. The issue is that it's laissez-faire. And just like you talked about parents, some parents want to be liked by their kids. Well, I think we've all seen the result of that with a parent that just wants their kids to be liked. The behavior follows that. It's erratic. It's not responsible behavior. And so, again, if you got a culture where people are not being held accountable, you've got a bad culture. And you're not going to have a business that's growing. They're going to be, again, laissez-faire. The people that are accountable and want to produce are going to eventually look at the other people and ask themselves, why am I working so hard if there's no reason to, you know, they're getting paid the same as I am. So,
that can quickly topple an industry, a business, a culture, everything. As soon as you have one person that thinks that way and can justify slowing down, being lackadaisical, or just doing the bare minimum to get by, as soon as that happens to one, it can spread like a wildfire, and you're at a very serious disadvantage from then on. So I think it's a really good point. Yeah. And, you know, how can leaders create that accountability without feeling like they're micromanaging everybody?
Well, again, I think it comes down to, you know, if you have to micromanage someone, if you have to be into the in the situation where somebody is not motivated enough or inspired enough, I think maybe motivation is a bit of an myth. You probably have made a hiring mistake in the first place. So hiring is extremely important to find people that are self-starters, have their own locus of control, internal locus of control rather than an external locus of control. But what I mean by that, an external focus of control is feeling like they're a victim or that other people are, I couldn't do this because of this or that. Whereas an internal person will always look at it and say, well, I failed because I didn't do this. And so the difference between accountability is really finding people that have an internal locus of control that are obsessed with improving and being held responsible for their actions and their behavior. And so if you can do that, you're going to have a good culture. If you have people that have that internal, and then it's simply a matter of then getting them to set their own goals and you being the person that is measuring and making them accountable toward achieving their own goals and being supportive and helpful in helping them achieve those goals.
I like that. It's too often, you know, when business owners, entrepreneurs, leaders get this excitement about holding accountability, it quickly turns into micromanaging. So I'm glad you really pointed those things out and broke it down that simple, because it is an easy mistake to make. Now, you know, with this segment coming close to an end, you know, it's been absolutely incredible to have these conversations with you. Where can our followers and our audience find you? Where can they find your work and continue the conversation with you?
The best place to probably get a lot of the information that I'm sharing is in my blog, strategicdiscipline.positioningsystems.com. They can reach out to me by email, dwick@positioningsystems.com, or call me, 319-393-2565. Thanks, Ryan. Thanks for asking.
Doug, thank you for sharing your wisdom and experience. Today, we've seen that alignment, vision, tough decisions, and accountability aren't just business buzzwords. They're the core of lasting success. For our viewers, I challenge you to ask yourself, where is your team rowing in different directions? Or are they all aligned because of your vision and ability to live it and communicate it? And what can you do this week to bring that clarity and accountability? I'm Ryan Herpin, and this has been The Bottom Line. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time. And remember, success isn't given. It's earned.